So I'm going to bring back Paul Thompson, author of The Terror Timeline and creator of the 9/11 Timeline Project from the Center for Cooperative Research. And it's that book that we're talking about here on People Rise Up this morning. Welcome back, Paul.
Hi.
So in that fashion I mentioned earlier on of jumping around wildly because the book's way too big to talk about in, let alone most of an hour, say 6 hours, let's jump straight to the day of 9/11 itself, because there's all kinds of crazy anomalies associated with that, not the least of which begins when Flight 11 is should be considered hijacked by the FAA at 8:13 in the morning when they lose radar contact. They don't lose radar contact. They lose voice communication with them. And at 8:20, the identify friend or foe beacon goes off. At 8:20, it also veers off course. Boston Flight Control thinks it might be hijacked, which, according to the FAA regulations, means they're supposed to do all kinds of standard operating procedures, which they don't. At 8:21 in the morning, American Airlines managers are informed via a flight attendant of the hijack, and immediately the response from American Airlines managers at headquarters are, quote, "Don't spread this around. Keep it close. Keep it quiet. Let's keep this among ourselves. What else can we find out from our own sources about what's going on?" Very chilling. That's American Airline managers' initial response to these hijackings.
That's pretty incredible, isn't it? And what's happened to those people now? Have they been fired? Have they been promoted? I'd really like to know.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to know who they are.
Yeah, that's a very good question. But, I mean, you mentioned that the hijacking started at around 8:13, and you know, we have to cut, I think, the air traffic control some slack. It probably wouldn't have been until about 8:20 when they had enough clues to say, okay, this is definitively a hijacking. The transponder's off. We haven't been able to get them by radio. They're off course. You know, and as if that isn't enough, then a few minutes later, they actually hear the hijackers' voices accidentally broadcasting and talking about how they even say, quote, "We have some planes," with a plural. So very early on, they get this incredible clue saying that this is not a single hijacking, but this is a multiple hijacking. And yet, according to some accounts, they wait about 15 minutes, 20 minutes before they notify NORAD after they've gotten all those clues and say, you know, let's get some fighters up here after this plane.
Well, and they didn't follow standard procedure, which had been followed several dozen times over the course of the previous year regarding intercepts. And when they eventually did get around to notifying the folks that they needed to get in touch with, they were met at the National Military Command Center in the Pentagon by someone in charge who had never, ever worked the floor before as the commander, Captain Charles Leidig. This came out in the final 9/11 commission hearing. There was a two-hour window, more or less, that overlapped completely with the attacks, where this guy who'd never worked the NMCC floor was in charge as a last-minute substitution for Brigadier General Montague Winfield.
Yeah, if I could explain that a bit better, the NMCC, National Military Command Center, that's in the Pentagon, and it's sort of the military's emergency response center. The night before, this General Winfield said to this very young, inexperienced Charles Leidig, he said, you know, "Can you take over for me for a couple hours tomorrow morning starting at 8:30? And I don't have it in the book, but I've since found out that apparently he was taking off to go have a meeting with Dick Cheney at that time.
Hmm.
And at the same time, you have over in the FAA, you have this person named Ben Sliney, who is the I don't know, you call it the National Operations Manager. He's basically in charge of directing all air traffic in the entire country that morning.
I've
and
also,
that's his first day on the job. So you have people in two incredibly critical positions, and both of them are having literally not only their first day on the job, but their first hour on the job when this attack happens.
Yeah, I've also heard him referred to as the FAA hijack coordinator, which I guess you sort of default to if you're in charge of all air traffic. Additionally, that morning, there's not only a lot of confusion regarding where Dick Cheney is supposed to be and what he's doing, but the same can be said for Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld and Acting Joint Chiefs of Staff Chairman Richard Myers. All of those people, I suppose maybe not Cheney, but Rumsfeld and Myers for sure, have given several conflicting accounts of where they were, when, and what they were doing. The 9/11 Commission...
I'm glad you bring that up, because this is something that I discovered recently when I looked really closely at their accounts of what they were doing that morning. And all these leaders of the U.S. military, the high chain of command, it's incredible what they say they're doing that morning. Like Paul Wolfowitz, the very well-known Deputy Secretary of Defense, he claims that after he was told about the second World Trade Center attack, that he said... Well, it didn't seem like there was much that we could do, so I just went ahead with the meeting we were already going on with. And Rumsfeld, the defense secretary, he also was told about the second attack right after it happened, and he just went ahead with his normal morning CIA briefing. All these people have these really bizarre accounts, as if like they didn't care. Oh, no big deal. You know, let's just get back to what we were doing before. And yet you have Richard Clark, you know, as we talked earlier, the quote-unquote counterterrorism czar, and he has an account that completely contradicts all their accounts.
Mm-hmm.
And interestingly enough, the 9/11 Commission, they talk about what he did in really great detail before 9/11, but on the day of 9/11, they just have two sentences devoted to him. They say, Richard Clark was leading a video conference that morning, and while important, it had no practical impact on the management of events that day. Which is so bizarre, because right. Even Condoleezza Rice, who's now sort of his enemy, said that of all the people, he was the one who was managing things on the morning of 9/11 more than anybody else.
Mm-hmm. At Condoleezza Rice's specific and explicit request.
Yeah, so basically amongst all these top leaders, we have these wildly conflicting accounts, and there's been really no attempt to get to the bottom of it and figure out who's telling the truth and who's lying. Somebody is clearly lying.
And probably more than one person. Donald Rumsfeld is supposedly in two locations at once, not only on the secure video conference with Richard Clark and many other folks, but he's also, for part of 9 to 10 a.m., or I guess 9:30 to 10:30, he's also outside the Pentagon, supposedly helping.
Yeah, he claims that he was helping load people onto ambulances, load the wounded. But yet, although there are literally just thousands of photos, as people rushed to the scene there isn't a single photo or any evidence of him actually loading anyone onto ambulances. And when he gave his story again under oath, he interestingly cut that part out of his story. So it's just, to me, it's just incredible the way that there's just all these really strange stories, and the media doesn't seem interested, again, in connecting these dots. I've actually talked about these contradictions to a number of reporters to try to get them to write a story about this, and nobody has yet, except for, well, I should mention Gail Sheehy, one of the few good reporters on this, working for the New York Observer. She's written some on this. But generally, you're not going to find this information. You're not going to find people connecting the dots in the mainstream media.
We're unfortunately rapidly closing in on the end of our time here, and there's oh so many more things that I would just love to dive right into, like the planes that happened to be near Flight 93 before it went down somewhere in Pennsylvania. Lots of eyewitness evidence regarding that. Lack of kind of standard investigative procedure following many of these crashes. Let's see. Oh, yeah, right. The Bush administration saying there shouldn't be any investigation of 9/11. I couldn't believe that when I first saw that. The fact that these guys are saying, you know, this is this tremendous justification for the biggest war we've ever launched, and there doesn't need to be any reason to find out what actually happened. Just that it happened is enough. Something.
Well, if I could just say one final thing about all this, is that I hope people, of course, read the book and get informed. But beyond that, I think we also have to be active in press to try to get to the truth about this. Because as long as people at the current state don't really seem that curious, we're never really going to get to the bottom of this. And if we don't get to the bottom of 9/11, I think it's very, very bad news for the future of this country. So if people are interested, you can go to not only my website, cooperativeresearch.org, and start getting involved with research, but also 911visibility.org for trying to spread the word about, people getting informed.
All right. Well, thank you very much for taking some time out of your schedule to join us here on KBOO to talk about your book, The Terror Timeline. And always, thank you very much for your really important compiling research, etc.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
All right. You take care, Paul. We'll talk again to you soon.
Okay, great.
Bye. Okay, so off he goes. Again, his website, www.cooperativeresearch.org. Go to the People Rise Up website at kboo.fm. Go to the program schedule. Click Wednesday morning at 10. There's all kinds of links related not only to the interview we just had, but 9/11 in general.